Kate withheld comment. How is the house looking?
Just fine. Why?
Your father and I are feeling a little nostalgic. I know we usually stay in Naples October through May, but we were thinking that popping up to Keene's Harbor for a family Thanksgiving would be wonderful, just like the old days.
But we always had Thanksgiving at the country club, Kate said. You know, the Thanksgiving Day parade in Grosse Pointe, then turkey with your choice of stuffing and sides overlooking the putting green.
We must have had it at the Nutshell once, Mom said.
No, never.
Then it's definitely time. Your father and I aren't getting any younger, you know, Kate. Man, she hated it when her mother played the aging card.
Neither am I, Mom.
True. So this year, let's get you, Chip, Bunny, and all the family up to the cottage for an old-fashioned meal.
A couple weeks ago, Kate might have been horrified. The insecurity and jealousy that had infected her marriage to Richard had just sort of bled all over her other relationships, including the one with her family. But the truth was that before Richard, holidays like Thanksgiving had always been a really big deal to her. Suddenly, Kate realized that she missed her mom. She missed her dad. She missed her brother and sister. They were her family, and they loved her, and she loved them. She might as well get on the turkey train.
That sounds fun. Can't wait. Good, dear. Now see if you can find a chef to cook for us. I just want to relax with the family. If you can't, we might have to come up with another option. Perhaps a restaurant up that way?
I'll start looking.
Keep me abreast of the plans.
Sure thing. Give my love to Dad.
Kate hung up and went face down on the desk. She'd forgotten about Matt. How was she going to explain that they were living together to her parents? Matt entered the room and settled into a guest chair.
What's up?
Little wrinkle lines were forming on Kate's forehead.
My whole family is coming to the Nutshell for Thanksgiving.
And?
Kate bit her lower lip. I've got two problems. One is of the big variety. The other could be huge.
Lay it on me.
Kate sighed. You know how Charlie Brown had a Thanksgiving party for Peppermint Patty, except that he could only make popcorn and toast? Matt laughed.
Yeah.
Well, I can only make toast. Matt got out of his chair and hugged her close. It was nice, friendly and loving, like she had known him all her life.
No worries. I'll help. It'll be fun. Was that the big or huge problem?
In Matt's arms, her problem seemed small. My parents are a little, she paused, conservative. Matt smiled.
No problem. We can bond over our shared opposition to the hippie menace.
If they find out I'm living with a guy, they'll be horrified. They won't understand that cosmic forces are to blame.
Matt shook his head.
Isn't this Barb the table dancer we're talking about?
Barb the married table dancer, Kate pointed out. It's like the 1960s in my family. It's all about the order of events. You don't skip past the entree straight to dessert, and you don't shack up. The only thing that could make it worse is announcing at Thanksgiving that you're my baby daddy.
Matt's eyebrows perked up. He held her tighter.
That can be arranged, too. And on the plus side, no one will care about only having toast for Thanksgiving.
I'm serious.
Matt brushed her hair away from her face.
So we have a minor inconvenience to deal with.
Kate looked at him for a long while.
And it's Thanksgiving. And if I can't find your saboteur by then, my house belongs to you. So it really isn't a we problem. It's my problem.
I see.
Kate felt bad. The truth was, she wanted it to be their problem. And in her heart, she'd said something very different to Matt. But her hasty words had just sort of popped out and hung in the air like a bad smell. Kate decided to change the subject. She'd try to make it right with Matt later, after work. The first thing I need to do is get a locksmith, then move back and get the Nutshell ready for them, she said.
Thanksgiving is still over a week off. What's the rush?
I just think it's time. It's been pretty quiet the past few weeks. Maybe the jerk has gotten bored with the whole thing and moved on. Anyway, I'm feeling safer now.
She hesitated and looked at Matt with wide, hopeful eyes. And you can get your life back.
For the record, I'm okay with my life the way it is. But But all the same, even though I don't like it or fully understand it, I'm not going to stop you from moving back out there, Matt said.
Thanks. It was what she'd asked for, but it wasn't what she'd wanted. She wanted to add that she knew she was being weird, that this was what dealing with her parents did to her, and she just couldn't stop herself.
Chuck has kind of grown to like having Stella around, Matt said.
She knew what he was saying, and it had nothing to do with dogs. But maybe she was more traditional than she wanted to believe. Maybe I can bring Stella over to visit every now and then?
Chuck would like that, Matt said.
He hitched his thumb toward the door.
Do you think you could head out to the tap room? I need a couple of minutes to get my notes together.
She needed a couple of minutes to pull herself together, too. This had hurt way more than she'd thought it would. After Kate left, Matt sat at his desk. He had no notes. All he had was a numb sensation he'd last felt when he'd fallen off his roof and nearly knocked himself out. Matt couldn't nail the exact moment, but at some point reality and he had parted ways. Having Kate in his house and in his life had felt real to him, not just an arrangement. But even though they'd had breakfast together, gone to work together, and flipped a coin over whether to watch football or movies at night, it hadn't been real. If he'd been rational, he'd have known it had been all the illusion and none of the substance of being a couple. But he wasn't rational. He was in love. Still, no matter how crappy he might be feeling, he had a room full of people waiting for him out there. So he'd move on and deal with his feelings for Kate later. Matt joined his crew in the tap room, and when he looked at his gang, he felt better, if not perfect.
Thanks to those of you who weren't scheduled for coming in and the rest of you for being here early, he said. I don't have a lot of big-picture updates about what's going on here at Depot Brewing, except to officially announce the start of a music series next summer that Kate's been putting together, and I'm sure most of you have heard about it anyway. I think we're going to see a big jump in business on formerly slow nights, and I want to put on more part-time staff. If you know of anyone good, send them my way.
Steve, the server, raised his hand.
I've heard the Baggers is cutting staff down to one server a shift. You might pick up someone there.
Thanks, Matt said.
He'd known the traffic had been down for Harley, but he hadn't known it was that bad. If it was time to give Harley a hand, Matt was glad to do it.
And now on to other news, Matt said. I know that a lot of you have had questions about where I go when I'm not around the brewery. To make a long answer short, I've been spending a lot of time in Traverse City, and that time investment is starting to pay off. By next summer, I'll be looking for staff for a microbrewery up there, plus for a new motel and restaurant. I'm also opening a new restaurant in Keene's Harbor. It's a couple miles out of town on the lake. If any of you are interested in making the move, you'll get first shot at the openings. Think it over and let me know. No rush, okay? And now I'm going to turn the meeting over to Jerry to update you on front-of-the-house matters.
His manager had just started talking when Matt motioned Kate over. They walked into the hallway by his office.
Why don't you take the rest of the day off? Get your locksmith and whatever else you need done lined up so that you can move back to the nutshell, he said.
And what's the point? She felt anger rising in her voice. New locks on a great old house you're just going to bulldoze. I never had a chance. I wouldn't be surprised if you put Junior up to the mess he caused me just to seal the deal. She knew she'd gone too far, but he'd caught her by surprise with his announcement, and it had all come gushing out. 4 days later, Kate stood in the nutshell's living room, steeling herself for her parents' impending arrival. She was pretty sure she had her act together, since she'd prepared as she would for any natural disaster. Kate had stocked up on Manhattan mixings and maraschino cherries for her dad, and champagne and crossword puzzles for her mom. She'd also hidden a handful of candy bars and 3 bags of potato chips in her bedroom in case she needed to take shelter for an extended period of time. It was nearly 6, and a pot of beef stew simmered in the kitchen. Kate had thrown in a jar of cocktail onions and some red wine, hoping she could fake her mom into thinking it was a classic bœuf bourguignon. Mom had always been all about dinner being a sit-down meal, even if the house had been falling down around them. When she was a kid, it sometimes seemed inconvenient. Now, she realized it was one of the best parts of her childhood, a constant in her adolescent life that made her feel safe and protected. Kate smoothed her hands over the black pencil skirt, which she'd last worn when working at Detroit Monthly. Mom didn't believe in jeans, paper napkins, or a ketchup at the dinner table. As a teen, Kate had tried to assure her mother that all those things were perfectly real and even kind of cool. Mom had never bought in. Tonight, Kate didn't mind being dressed up. If nothing else, the change in wardrobe kept it front and center in her mind that she'd been right not to expose Matt to this. Somehow, she couldn't picture him wearing a button-down shirt just to eat beef stew. Stella's ears perked at the sound of a car in the drive. She trotted toward the front door and gave a welcoming yip. Kate gave the dog a gentle pat. "Sure, it's all happiness and sunshine now, but let's see what tune you're singing by Turkey Day." The truth was, she was excited too. Kate pulled on her jacket and went outside to greet her parents. Stella, who wasn't a fan of the icy wind off the lake, lurked indoors. Though Kate had visited with her parents just a handful of months ago, she felt a surprising sense of nostalgia seeing them here at the Nutshell. The years had treated her father well. With his Florida tan, silver hair, and aristocratic features, he still reminded Kate of a diplomat in the Foreign Service. Mom was no slacker either. Her hair might have tipped the scales from blonde to gray, but otherwise, she looked much as she had when Kate was a teen, and she still stood a good 4 inches taller than Kate, too. After hugs and greetings, Kate looked into the back of the SUV her dad had rented. "That sure is a lot of luggage, Mom," Kate said. Kate's mom removed a suitor from the back. "It might seem excessive, but you never know what events might pop up and how the weather might be. In this case, not many events, and freezing would be good bets." Kate glanced at her mom's pale pink and very thin cardigan sweater. "Do you have a coat in one of those suitcases?" "I have another sweater or two, but I left my mink in cold storage." Kate was no fan of furs, but if her mom had to wear one, now would be the time. "You can borrow one of my jackets while you're here." "That's all right. I'll ring up Bunny and ask her to bring something appropriate," Mom said. "In the meantime, your father and I can pretend we're snowbound and stay indoors. It could be very romantic." Kate put her muscles to work, helping her dad haul the luggage. In the time it took them to get everything inside, Stella had fallen asleep on her mom's lap. Kate's mother sat on the flowery sofa, stroking Stella. "Your dog's a charmer, Kate. What do you think I should get her for Christmas?" "Anything in cashmere would probably do," her mother laughed. "Well, naturally, she is an Appleton female. And how about you?" Let me get back to you on that one." Kate couldn't think of the last time her mother had gotten her anything other than a gift card. Of course, she also couldn't recall when she'd gotten her mother anything other than a silk scarf. "Why don't you two get settled in, and I'll get dinner on the table?" Half an hour later, after her parents had their cocktails in hand, the family sat down to Kate's fake boeuf bourguignon. The onions tasted weird even to Kate, but no one mentioned them. In fact, her dad said that stew made the perfect meal when snowed in. Never mind that they weren't really snowed in and that Kate had started the stew hours before their arrival. Toward the end of the meal, Kate's dad stuck an old Johnny Mathis album on the stereo.
"Katie, the house looks just great. Better than I remember. I really think you could make your plan to turn this place into a B&B work."
He turned to Kate's mom.
"Remember seeing Johnny perform that winter in Lake Tahoe?"
The two of them shared a smile and clasped hands on the tabletop. Kate pushed around the onions in her stew, not wanting to break into their moment.
"Kate, if you'll excuse us, your mother and I need to have this dance. And don't worry about clearing the table. We'll do that. Later."
"Sure," Kate said. "I'll just go take care of some stuff in my room." She didn't feel like telling them right now about Matt and his plans to turn the house into a restaurant. She listened to her parents laugh through the walls of her room. If this was going to be a nightly event while playing snowed in, Kate was going to need more chips and chocolate in her stash. For crying out loud, these people were her parents. According to Kate's clock, it was now 10 at night. It felt more like 3 in the morning. Kate was bored out of her mind. The music downstairs was still going strong, though her parents had moved on to Frank Sinatra. For lack of anything else to do, Kate dumped her purse onto the dresser and began to sort through the bag's contents. A cleaning might make it weigh less than a ton. Kate pulled out her wallet, makeup bag, and the notepad she carried to write to-do lists that she could then ignore. At the purse's bottom, in a nest of pennies and market receipts, lay the letter from her mom that she tucked away and never finished reading. Now's as good a time as any. Kate settled onto the bed. Because she'd already heard a fresh update on all nieces and nephews during dinner, she fast-forwarded past the opening chat and the bit where her mom wished that Kate would have gotten a business degree. But there's no remaking the past. Your road won't be as easy as mine, her mother wrote. Still, I know you're up to the challenge. Yes, you've been struggling, and it was obvious to both your father and me how much it upset you to ask us for help. But we were happy to give it, darling. And though it's not kind to say, neither your father nor I were especially fond of Richard. He tended to try to build himself up at your expense. You'll be a happier woman without him. You've got that right, Kate said. I think in many ways I envy you, Kate. You have a spirit I didn't have at your age. Oh, I had my moments, but you have me beat. You also have the determination to weather the tough times. I'm not so sure I would have had your sort of grit. I am very proud of you. I need to tell you that more often, and you need to begin believing it. Then we'll rule the world. Kate smiled. Maybe she could imagine her mother dancing on tabletops after all. And maybe she had been wrong about her parents all these years. It wasn't that they thought she couldn't do anything. It was that they thought she could do everything. A while before midnight, Matt sat alone at his closed bar, nursing a tall glass of water. Since Kate had moved out, his universe had been totally jacked up. He'd even been feeling sorry for himself, which was a new and unpleasant sensation. When the cuckoo clock over the bar struck 12, Matt planned to get the hell over this, somehow. And in the meantime, he'd watch the clock's minute hand move. A sharp rapping sounded on the taproom window, pulling Matt's attention from the clock. Lizzie stood at the glass in her police officer's uniform, flashlight in hand. Matt pointed her toward the front entrance.
What are you doing here?
My promised late-night rounds, she said. The bigger question is, what are you still doing here?
Waiting for midnight.
Why, are you going to turn into the guy version of Cinderella or something? She grinned. Kate mentioned your shoe fixation.
More like I was hoping to turn back into myself.
I didn't know you weren't yourself. I mean, you skipped last Friday's fundraiser and everything, Lizzie said. He rubbed the back of his neck.
Yeah, well, Kate moved out, and I wanted to enjoy my new peace and quiet, but Chuck really misses her.
He's really stuck on Kate, huh?
This isn't the kind of stuff we talk about, he said. It feels wrong.
She gave him a crooked smile. It's just that Chuck doesn't generally have relationship problems, and I don't generally have relationships.
Good point, he said.
Lizzie sat down on a bar stool next to Matt. So why did Kate move out? Matt was surprised by the question. Kate and Lizzie had grown pretty close.
You mean she hasn't talked to you?
Not in the past few days.
She found out her parents were coming in for Thanksgiving, and she kind of freaked out. Apparently, they don't believe in sleeping in a guy's guest bedroom before you're married.
Interesting, Lizzie said. And in more ways than one. Kate slept in the guest bedroom?
Don't let it get around. My false reputation is at stake.
As if I would. And no one would believe me anyway. But really, so what if she moved home? Things have been calm here, and she'll be safe.
Well, I'm also about to foreclose on her childhood home and destroy her dreams so I can expand my evil empire.
I know.
You do?
Yeah. I'm a police officer, and I'm a woman. That makes me a big snoop. I also know you made arrangements with Kate's contractor to secretly pay him yourself and have him reimburse you once he gets the money from her. Does she really believe a contractor would ever wait for his money? Matt grinned sheepishly. He'd been caught.
Does anyone else know?
No, I don't think so. Why'd you do it?
You have a lot of money invested in this project, don't you?
Matt shrugged.
I love her.
Lizzie burst out laughing.
Look at you. You're a mess. Do you want my advice?
Give it your best shot, because I'm coming up blank.
I love Kate. I think she's fabulous. I hope you two work it out and have a million kids or whatever it is you're looking for. You're my big brother. Heck, my only brother. I want to see you happy. My advice to you is, suck it up.
Matt raised an eyebrow at his sister.
Since when was Matt Culhane a quitter? You never gave up in football or hockey. You didn't give up in the eighth grade when Mary Lou Petty refused to go to junior prom with you. You certainly never gave up on Depot Brewing, even when a lot of people thought you should. If you love Kate that much, go get her.
Lizzie was right. He'd go to Traverse City for a couple of days, giving Kate the space she needed and a chance to get reacquainted with her parents. When he returned, he was sure Kate would be ready to invite him to dinner, and if she wasn't, he'd invite himself. Desperate times called for desperate measures. After all, Chuck really missed her. Chapter 19. It was a Monday evening before Thanksgiving. Kate's mom and dad were still living out their snowbound fantasy, and Kate was beginning to lose her mind. Sinatra playing on the stereo 12 hours out of 24 was part of the issue. The rest was that her parents gave her little privacy. In a house this size, how could they be everywhere at once? Kate was beginning to think cloning was involved. She was currently holed up in her bathroom for both prime cell phone reception and a little alone time. The doorknob rattled.
Kate, are you in there?
Yes, Mom, Kate said from her resting spot in the dry bathtub.
You've been in there a while.
Yes, I have. I'm taking a bath.
That's odd. I didn't hear the water run, and you know how the pipes in this place are.
Kate turned the page in her magazine and readjusted the pillow beneath her head.
Maybe Sinatra drowned it out.
Maybe, her mother said.
Are you going to be out soon? I think Stella needs to go potty.
Kate felt a little guilty for having abandoned her poodle in the name of solitude, but Stella would get over it. Dad could feed the dog table scraps since Kate wasn't out there to stop him.
Her chain is at the kitchen door, Mom, Kate said. Just put her on it and she'll do the rest.
You're sure you're okay in there?
Absolutely.
Her mother moved off, leaving Kate to her thoughts and a cell phone that didn't want to ring back. She knew from Ginger that Matt was going to be up in Traverse City on Tuesday and Wednesday. From Matt, she'd heard nothing directly. Not even so much as a hello since the staff meeting early last week. She missed him. She wanted to find a way back into his life. It was chilly here on the outside. Attempt number 4, she announced, then pressed the speed dial number she'd assigned him. At this point, she didn't really expect an answer. It was more for the sport of hearing his voicemail message that she called. But this time, Matt answered.
Hi, Kate.
Kate's hands started feeling a little sweaty. For the love of Mike, she hadn't felt this nervous since asking Scotty McDougal to the Sadie Hawkins dance in 9th grade.
I hear you're heading out of town for a couple of days.
I'm on the road now.
I was wondering if you'd like me to help take care of Chuck. I can check on him as many times a day as you think he'd need, and he knows who I am, so that would be nice for him.
She was babbling and couldn't stop. And honestly, it's no big deal. You'd be doing me a favor by giving me an excuse to get away from here in the evening for a while and... Oh, hell. I really miss you.
I miss you, too.
Kate smiled with her entire body. She felt like the Grinch when his heart grew 3 sizes that day.
How are you doing with your parents?
He asked.
I'm hiding in the bathtub to make this call. No place is private anymore. If I go into my bedroom, my mother wants to have a girl-to-girl. She wants to know if I'm recovering from my divorce. She wants to tell me how to find a new man. I mean, I'm glad we're talking a whole lot more than we used to, but sometimes I just need a break from her advice.
He laughed.
That good, eh?
The 1960s outlook. I don't get it. But I guess I don't have to. Bottom line is that I love her and Dad.
I think I'd like your parents, he said.
Kate smiled.
You probably would, and they'd like you, too.
They were silent, but it wasn't in the least uncomfortable.
So I'd really be doing you a favor if I had you check on Chuck.
Kate's smile had taken up permanent residence.
Definitely.
Actually, that would be great, he said. Lizzie has promised to stop by, but she has the next couple of days off. Before I enlisted her, she'd been talking about visiting a college friend downstate.
I'd be happy to cover for her, really.
Well, thank you. I'm going to try to hustle it along, but I need to meet with my attorney and get things wrapped up with Chet before we get any closer to Thursday and family time.
Thanksgiving. That's kind of a tough time of the year to be doing something like that. I never thought I'd say it, but I almost feel sorry for poor Chet.
She paused before continuing. I want to tell you something, though. I know Chet has been thinking about things. He's probably sitting in his bathtub right now, feeling a little selfish and hoping that he hasn't messed up a great friendship.
The bathroom door rattled again.
Kate, is there someone in there with you?
No, Mom, I'm just talking to myself.
I worry about you, Kate.
I'm fine, promise. Could you check on Stella? I think I hear her barking.
Another lie, but she wanted to finish this call.
Goodness, her mother said. That dog is worse than a toddler.
I think she's gone, but I know she's going to be back, Kate said to Matt after listening to the sound of her mother's footsteps fade. How often should I check on Chuck?
Lizzie's going to be there tonight, but if you could stop out tomorrow morning, then again in the evening, that should work. And Wednesday morning should be good. I'll be back in the afternoon. And I know he doesn't like it, but put him on his leash when you let him out. It's deer season.
And you haven't painted him orange, she said, and smiled at the sound of his laughter.
Chuck has enough dignity issues as it is, he said.
So true.
Kate sat upright at the sound of her mother back at the door.
I have to go, and thank you for letting me watch Chuck.
Her mother was back, rapping on the door.
Kate, it's almost dinner time, and I can't find a single thing to light the candles.
After waiting an appropriate amount of time to theoretically dry off and get dressed, Kate cruised downstairs. As she'd expected, Dad was slipping Stella some of whatever Mom had served as an appetizer. At least he was keeping his double Manhattan extra cherries to himself. He looked over at Kate.
Who'd have thought a dog would like kippered herring?
She chose to take the question as rhetorical, since she couldn't say she knew many humans who liked the stuff.
Just do me a favor and don't feed her too much.
He raised his Manhattan and gave her a wink.
All things in moderation, Katie Bug.
Her mom popped into the room. She was a festival of color this evening. Her dress competed with the sofa for which held the most flowers. But her mom's dress was more in Monet watercolor shades than the sofa's warring hues.
Are you positive you don't want to join us for dinner, Kate? We'd love more time with you before the rest of the family arrives tomorrow.
Thanks, but I'm not all that hungry.
Which wasn't quite accurate. She'd turned down dinner before she'd talked to Matt. Now that they talked, the knot in her stomach had disappeared, and she was starved. But no way was she interrupting what looked to be another major romantic event. She'd just grab something from the kitchen and go read a book. Kate's mom looped a lock of her silver blonde hair behind one ear.
Sorry to be a bother, but I still don't have the candles on the dining table lit, and they set the mood for love, after all.
Kate managed not to wince.
Let me go look in the kitchen.
She was totally okay with the senior set having an active love life. It was just growing to be TMI as it pertained to her parents.
Now that I think of it, that might not be necessary.
Kate's mom gave her husband a teasing smile.
Larry, you must have a lighter with that box of cigars you think you're hiding from me.
Her father laughed.
It could be. Let me go check.
He rose and stopped long enough to kiss her mom's cheek. Kate smiled. Her parents made love and intimacy look easy. She could learn a thing or two from them. Sunrise was approaching. Still, Kate couldn't sleep. Even her furry Stella comforter, who snored from the next pillow over, hadn't been enough. Kate reached for the nightstand lamp and switched it on. Her parents' talk of lighters and love had dug its way into her mind. Until she figured out why, she was back in insomnia land.
Lighters and love, she said aloud, not that Stella woke to listen.
Kate opened the nightstand drawer. Maybe if she wrote down everything she'd been dwelling on, she could sleep.
Before she could even reach for paper, though, an image of Layla lighting jack-o'-lanterns outside Depot Brewing popped into her head. But why? Kate flopped back against her pillow and focused on the details of that moment. It had been cold and windy, and Kate had been crushing on Matt. Nothing new there. Layla had used the same kind of lighter Harley carried. That would be no biggie, except it had been fancy, complete with crystals, like a gift from a sweetheart. Maybe one who had a lighter collection, like Harley Bagger. Kate considered the concept of a Harley-Layla hookup. Both were single, so why not? The idea was kind of cute. Or maybe not so cute, after all. She'd finally made the connection. Between the two of them, they had every event of vandalism covered. Kate bolted from bed and went to her dresser. She pulled out the stuff she'd found on the floor at Depot Brewing before she'd taken her beer slip-and-slide ride. The white cocktail napkin meant nothing. It could be found in 100 bars within 100 miles of Keene's Harbor. But the string, that was another story. She twisted it, noting the slender red thread laced through it. This was no ordinary utility twine, and now she was pretty sure she knew what it was. Taking care not to disturb her parents, Kate padded downstairs to the computer set up in the corner of the living room. She fed a couple of words into the images section of her favorite search engine. "Bingo," she said as she looked at the pictures on the screen. The string in question was a replacement wick for a vintage windproof lighter. Layla had been laid up and couldn't have turned on the taps, but her lover could have. Kate had pegged at least one saboteur. His name was Harley Bagger. Tuesday morning was still fresh with frost, and already Matt was running out of reasons to stay in Traverse City. A 2-day trip had made sense when it had seemed easier to be far away from Kate than close enough to rush things and do something stupid. Now that they were talking, he was all for soon and stupid. He'd met with his attorney over coffee at 7, and a suit would be filed to collect from Chet unless the brewer was willing to settle out of court. For both their sakes, he hoped Chet would. A quick stop out to see Travis last night had been positive and productive. The guy had come up with a business plan and some ideas for a citrus summer beer to celebrate the opening of the Tropicana. All was well with the world. Almost. At just past 9, Matt walked out of his office and into Ginger's reception area. She looked up from the crossword puzzle she was doing.
"What's a 4-letter word for idiot?" she asked.
"Matt."
"Really, throw me a word."
"Dolt."
She frowned down at the puzzle, then smiled up at him.
"That fits."
And it fit him, too. Since when had he not grabbed for what he wanted?
"Can you call and reschedule tomorrow's meetings until next week?" he asked.
"Sure, what's the matter?"
"Unfinished business back home."
Ginger snorted.
"Right, business. Blonde unfinished business, maybe?"
"Yeah, another 4-letter word. And it means happiness," Matt said.
He'd let Ginger guess on her own, because he wanted to get home and grab love. Kate glared at her cell phone as she parked in front of Matt's place. It wasn't quite 10, and already she'd struck out on 3 separate calls. First she'd called Matt, but the call went straight to voicemail. Then she'd called the police station and come up empty. She'd sort of expected that, since she'd noticed the office was unattended a lot this time of year. Cleet's voice on the answering machine had instructed her to hang up and call 911 if this was an emergency. Having a suspicion of who'd been sabotaging Matt didn't seem to fit the bill, so she'd left Cleet a message asking him to call her as soon as possible. Because she was trying to be thorough, she'd done the same on Lizzie's voicemail, even though she knew Matt's sister was probably on her way downstate. She'd try all 3 again once Chuck had been fed and loved. Kate exited her Jeep. The air was crisp enough so that it felt sharp in her lungs. By the time evening fell, it was going to be nose-numbingly cold out here in the country. She'd be back at the Nutshell by then, and Chip and Bunny and their respective crews would be there too. All the more reason to cherish the quiet out here. But as Kate walked toward the front door, a "b-woof" sounded from the back of the house. She halted. Only one dog she'd ever met had a voice that could carry with such conviction. Chuck?
Woof.
Kate rounded the side of the house, her shoes sweeping through the blanket of leaves underfoot. Chuck stood on the back deck, tail wagging.
Dude, when did you become an escape artist?
Woof.
He butted the back door with one broad shoulder, begging to get in. She supposed that Lizzie might have accidentally left him out when she departed last night. Kate pulled out her keys, opened the back door, and ushered Chuck in. He gazed up at her with worried hound eyes and let roll another round of
woof.
I don't speak dog as fluently as your owner, so we're going to have to play a game of 20 questions. I know you don't need to go out, so what's the deal?
Woof.
Water? Do you need water? He wagged his tail.
Woof.
Kate checked out Chuck's water bowl. Over half remained, but hey, she appreciated the concept of not drinking one's own slobber. If he wanted fresh, fresh he'd get. She bent over to pick up the bowl and caught a faint whiff of something. Thought number one was that Chuck had passed gas, but the scent was more wood smoke than unpleasant. You're off the hook, buddy.
Woof.
You're welcome. She rinsed his bowl at the kitchen sink, and the same scent grew strong enough to make her eyes burn, just like fire. Chuck's middle bowl clattered against the bottom of the aluminum sink as the thought sunk in. Kate turned off the water and followed the scent to the main living area. Flames flickered through a haze of suffocatingly thick smoke. Okay, so bawoof meant the place is burning, you idiot human. Kate turned back to the kitchen, grabbed Chuck by his collar, and hauled him toward the back door. She needed him safe before she did anything else. He dug in his heels once they'd reached the back deck. Come on, buddy. It seemed unsporting to shove a three-legged dog along, but it was for his own safety. Once they were on solid ground, Kate pulled her cell phone from her jeans pocket, dialed 911, and waited. When the operator came on the line, Kate said, "Fire," and gave Matt's address. Then she caught a glimpse of Chuck going back inside. Are you out of the house? The operator asked. Can you tell me what's going on, ma'am?
Chuck, no!
But Chuck didn't seem to speak human any better than she spoke dog, because he kept going. It was her fault for leaving the door open, and she'd never be able to live with herself if she didn't make an effort to snag the hound, and she never, ever wanted to have to tell Matt how she'd screwed up. Just please get the trucks here, she said to the operator, then hung up and jammed the phone back into her pocket. Kate climbed the deck steps.
Chuck, come on out!
She could risk this. The fire had been limited to the front room, and while Chuck was crafty, speed wasn't part of his repertoire. Kate stepped inside, and the smell of smoke assailed her. It now drifted in a thick haze at ceiling height. Stupid dog.
Chuck, treat! Side of beef! Whole turkey!
Kate started coughing. She should have asked Matt what magic words brought his dog running. But all she could do now was go inside. Of all the fire advice she'd ever learned, she discarded get out and focused on stay low. Three more steps in, and she heard a familiar voice behind her saying, "You never learn." Kate turned and opened her mouth to ask what was going on. A sharp pain shot through her head. Then Kate could say nothing at all. Chapter 20. Kate awakened slowly. She was lying on a freezing cold, rotted plywood floor that was gritty with dirt. She touched her fingertips to the side of her head, and they came away sticky with blood. Kate fought a wave of nausea. Harley Bagger stood over her.
"You're heavier than you look," he said.
She scoped out her surroundings.
"And you're meaner than you look."
The shack smelled decayed, and its narrow doorway and window slits didn't let in much air. She'd bet she was in an old deer blind that had fallen to the ground. Not a helpful clue, since deer blinds dotted the woods for miles around.
"You made me do this," Harley said.
"Made you? How do you figure that?"
"You shouldn't have come back for the stupid dog. I could have gotten away except for you. I could have been in and out that window I jimmied."
He glared at her.
"You messed up my work."
Kate's heart turned over at the thought of poor, sweet Chuck. The dog had gone back in to fetch Harley and had probably paid with his life.
But she couldn't think about that now or she'd break down. She braced her hands against the floor and sat up. Harley pointed a gun at her.
You stay right there.
What are you doing, Harley? Do you really think that's going to help matters? He wiped the sweat off his forehead.
Not for you, maybe.
What have I ever done to you? She inched her hand toward her front right pocket and her cell phone.
Don't bother. I threw the phone into the pond in back of his house. Do you think I'm stupid?
Honesty wasn't always the best policy. Kate kept her mouth closed.
It's Culhane. All Culhane. He's ruining me, Harley said.
She closed her eyes for a second, trying to push back the pain. How?
He's got all the business in town.
When you fired me, you'd let that keg of his beer go flat, hadn't you? Harley paced back and forth.
It wasn't about you. It was about messing with his reputation a little.
And after that, you started messing with Matt, too.
Prove it, he said.
Not that it matters at this point, but I can. The morning you left all the taps open in Matt's place, I found a replacement wick to one of your lighters on the floor. And I even know who gave you the keys to get in. Layla.
What do you mean, Layla?
I know you two are an item. She was using one of your vintage lighters before Shay Van Antwerp's party. From what I've learned cruising around on my computer, that crystal number is far too valuable to toss to a buddy.
Well, it's none of your business. But just so you know, she had nothing to do with this. I copied her keys without her knowing.
Do you love her? If she softened him up, maybe he'd let her go. Harley nodded.
We've been keeping it quiet, like, since she's still collecting a pension from her last husband that'll go away if we get married. All we want are winters in Florida and good food. But I spent my savings when business dropped.
That's not Matt's fault. The gun shook in his hand.
The hell it's not. I'm the victim here, not him. All I wanted was Depot Brewing down for a while so people would come back to my place. But that boy is like that battery rabbit on television. No matter what I do, he just keeps on going and going and going. And then he's got the nerve to ask me if I need a loan. I made him, not the other way around.
Kate kept calm, figuring it was all she had left. I'm sorry all of this has happened, but maybe it should all just stop now. Maybe we should just walk out of here.
I can't. And don't you see? I had no choice in any of this. I'm getting too far along in years. Layla and I should have stayed away from the casinos. All we were looking for was some money for retirement.
She'd been nearly boiled and now kidnapped so Bonnie and Clyde could go to dog races in Hialeah and eat grouper? Hell no! Harley's hand had stopped shaking. He had made a decision.
I'm not gonna go to jail. No way.
Kate didn't like the calm that had replaced his anger. Serving even more time for murder doesn't make much sense. Think you could put that thing away?
At my age, murder and arson are both life sentences. Why should I go to jail for either when, if I finish you off, there's no witness left?
She wouldn't have thought until today that Harley had a murder in him. But then again, she also would have said that arson was out of his range, and he had already tried to drown her in the brew house. Don't get carried away, Harley, she said. Relax, and let's decide what to do next. Why don't you sit down?
No, shut up and let me think.
Kate realized Harley had crossed the line into crazy land. She was going to have to find a way to run. Matt had 10 miles of tight road before he reached Keene's Harbor. That was 10 miles too many with a slow-moving rusty red tractor in front of him. He needed to talk to Kate while he had all this love stuff straight in his head. It had taken him damn long enough to get it that way. He spotted a break, passed the farmer, and put his foot to the floor. Another mile down the road, Matt's cell phone rang. Matt, it's Ella. He smiled. He liked Ella. Hell, he loved her for being Kate's first friend in Keene's Harbor.
Hey, how are you doing?
Are you in town? Something about her usually cheerful tone was off, he thought.
No, I'm just outside it on my way back from TC. Why?
She paused. I want you to pull to the side of the road, okay? This wasn't going to be good. He put the truck in park and threw on his flashers.
What's up?
I've got some bad news. There was a fire in the main room at your house. Kate called it in, and we got it under control with as little damage as you could expect, all things considered. Which was the least of his worries.
But what about Kate? Did she and Chuck get out okay?
That's why I asked Captain Norm if I could be the one to call you. Kate's car is out front,
but there's no sign of her or your dog in the house.
Did you check the outbuildings?
All we found was Harley Bagger's car parked behind your pole barn. The police, including your sister, are on the way, but I was kind of hoping you'd heard from Kate.
No.
Okay, Alice said. Well, let's not worry before we have to. It could be that everything's just fine. Matt's gut was telling him otherwise. Sunday, when he dropped in on Harley to offer him a loan, it had been a mess. Harley had been angry and insulted, and Matt had ended up feeling like a jerk. If Harley had come out to Matt's place just to talk to him, he wouldn't have parked behind the pole barn. And if he'd come to do something more, Kate might be in danger. Again.
Ella, I have to hang up now. I need you to find Cleet and tell him I said that Harley is his man.
I'll do that, she said. The wind was pushing through the woods, and Harley had taken to muttering to himself. Kate was trying to be a big, strong dog who could jump high, but she was scared, very scared. She needed to focus on the positive. Someone had to be looking for her by now. Her car had been right in front of Matt's house, and she couldn't be all that far away either. She would be no easy drag for a man in Harley's shape. Plus, with all her scrapes and aches and all the grunge clinging to her, she had to have left a trail. Harley sprang to attention, his voice shrill.
Did you hear that?
She definitely liked it better when he'd been ignoring her. Hear what?
That.
Kate picked up the distant sound of underbrush crackling. It was a deer, maybe, she said, though she was hoping for something better armed than Bambi, say, like the police. Harley moved to the blind's doorway. He gripped his gun in two shaking hands and aimed. At what? She wasn't sure.
He has a gun, Kate shouted.
Harley jumped and a shot went off. Whatever was heading their way rolled on through the leaves.
Woof.
Kate laughed with relief. It's Chuck. Harley didn't seem to have the same level of happiness. He lowered the gun and started muttering to himself again.
Woof.
Chuck clambered past Harley and went to Kate. Kate wrapped her arms around the dog.
I'm so glad you're alive.
Woof.
Kate flinched. I'm having sort of a headache issue. Could you keep it down?
Woof.
Harley waved his gun at her.
Make that dog shut up.
If I could, I would, she said.
Woof.
Do it now.
Woof, woof.
Harley swung his arm violently, waving the gun.
Get out of here, mutt.
Hey, do not threaten the dog. Kate got up on her knees and urged Chuck toward the doorway. Just go on out there, dude. I'm right here, and pretty soon Matt will be here to take us to Stella.
Woof, woof.
Harley gave him a boot to the rear, and Chuck yelped. Something inside Kate snapped, the same way it had when her ex admitted he'd dumped Stella. Nice, Harley, kicking a three-legged dog. This is your day for proving just how low you can go, isn't it? Chuck advanced on Harley. The dog's cheerful bark had been replaced by a vicious growl. His hair stood up along his spine, and he eyed Harley as though he were a porterhouse steak.
Back off!
Harley screamed at the dog. He aimed the gun at Chuck. As a former sensible city girl, Kate had taken a self-defense course. Use your strongest weapons against his weakest targets, her instructor had said. Kate's strongest weapon was surprise, or anger. It didn't matter which, because Harley was about to get hammered by both. Kate scrambled to her feet and went in low. Cut him off at the knees, then go for the throat. Together, they hit the cold earth outside the crumbling shack with a hard jolt. She heard the swoosh of the wind being knocked from Harley. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the gun go skittering. No way was he getting near it again. Still on top of him, she took the flats of her palms and slammed them hard onto his ears. Harley howled. I was just warming up, she said, because you're going down. Until Matt had to cover 60 acres of dense woods at a dead run, the privacy of a big property had always seemed like a good thing. If nothing else, it gave him a buffer from the semi-militia types living on the other side of the trees. He'd heard his share of strange sounds out here, but never anything quite like this, and he knew it wasn't coming from his arms-bearing neighbors. The howls he heard were Chuck exercising his right to free speech, plus something more. Matt picked up his pace.
"The deer blind's just ahead," he yelled to Cleet and Lizzie,
who were a stretch behind him. He cleared a cluster of trees and high brush and stopped just short of Kate and Harley. Harley was thrashing around on the ground, and Kate was whacking the bejesus out of him. Matt hauled Kate off Harley and hugged her to him. Harley started to rise, and Chuck chomped into Harley's pants leg. A beat later, Lizzie and Cleet burst onto the scene. Matt held Kate at arm's length and looked at her.
"Are you okay?"
"Yes, except for my head." Matt took in the blood-caked blonde hair and wondered if he could persuade Cleet to let him take a shot at Harley. Lizzie flipped Harley over and cuffed him. "Good dog," she said to Chuck, scratching him behind his ear. Matt cuddled Kate back against him and gave her a gentle kiss.
"What happened here?"
"He was going to kill Chuck, and I love Chuck."
"Chuck, huh?"
She nodded.
"Any chance you might love me, too?"
She nodded again.
"That's good,"
Matt said,
"because I love you."
Kate looked up at him. "You do?"
"I told you, sweetheart. When I'm in, I'm all in."
And Matt was in. Forever. Kate sat on the edge of the emergency room's triage cot. She could sum up her state as hurting and happy. She was going to have one heck of a headache, but she could handle it because she was in love. She tried to hold her heart safe from Matt, but it had opened anyway. Everything seemed brighter and better, though she supposed that could be from the pain meds, too.
"Are you ready to leave?"
Matt asked her. "Absolutely." He took her elbow while she stood. She smiled up at him. It wasn't so bad having a handsome guy's occasional help. Matt motioned to an envelope that had been left near her purse.
"Don't forget that."
Kate opened the envelope. It contained a cashier's check for $20,000.
"You caught my stalker. You earned every penny," he said. "I suppose I'm going to have to look for another place to build my restaurant."
Kate felt herself starting to cry. "Maybe you'd rather be the part owner of a struggling B&B. I need a partner to help me since I have a second job at this awesome brewery working with a guy I absolutely love."
"I love you, too."
"We should get me back to the nutshell," Kate said. "I know my mom and dad must be wondering where I am." Kate had called them from Matt's cell phone on the way to the hospital and said she'd been a little delayed but would be home soon. She figured this sort of story was better delivered in person. That way, everyone could see she was still in one piece. Matt looked toward a set of double doors.
"I should warn you that a whole lot of people are out there waiting for you."
"Really? Why?" He smiled.
"It's Keene's Harbor. Word got out among the locals about what happened, and they want to be sure you're okay."
So this was what it felt like to belong. Kate never wanted to lose the feeling, even if she did have a couple of tears threatening to roll. Everyone was there. Ella and Lizzie, the whole Culhane clan, Marcy Landon, Junior Grindwald, a horde from the depot, Mayor and Missy Mortensen. Kate waved Miss America style. "I'm fine," she said. Marcy made a clucking sound. "Not yet, you're not." She held out a brown paper bag. "No Keene's Harbor local comes out of the hospital without getting some of my chicken noodle soup." Kate accepted the gift. "Thank you. That's really sweet of you, Marcy, but you didn't need to fuss. You're family now. It's no fuss." Kate sniffled. "Okay, now I'm going to cry. How uncool is that?" But really, she thought this whole scene was cool. Possibly the coolest thing ever. Kate moved through her friends, accepting hugs and words of reassurance, until she finally found herself face to face with Junior Grindwald. Junior held out the blue cooler to Kate.
"I feel really bad about the mess I made, what with all the bees and Dookie. This is for you."
Kate opened up the cooler. It was filled with Snickers bars and wadded up $100 bills, enough to cover the cost of Kate's repairs. Junior leaned close to Kate so he could whisper in her ear.
"Don't tell anyone. I won the lottery a bunch of years ago, but I like being a handyman."
Matt finally pulled her away from the crowd.
"We'd better get you home."
Which was exactly how Keene's Harbor now felt to her.
20 minutes later, Kate and Matt sat in his truck, the last in line behind three luxury cars in the Nutshell's driveway.
"So," Matt said, "are you going to be okay in there?"
"About that."
"Yes."
Kate had thought this was going to be hard, but everything felt so right. "I was wondering if you'd like to come in and meet my family?"
"You're not asking me just because you don't feel like explaining what happened, are you?"
She laughed. "And if I were?" He smiled.
"You know I'd do it."
"I'd love the help, but that's not why I asked. I want them to meet you. I want them to see why I've fallen in love." She unbuckled her seatbelt and slid closer to Matt. "If I'm going to stay in Keene's Harbor and put down some roots, this is where I want to start." She leaned in until her lips met Matt's. "Right here." And this time, the kiss was perfect.
We hope you've enjoyed Love in a Nutshell, a Macmillan audiobook from St. Martin's Press. Text copyright 2011 by The Gus Group, LLC. Production copyright 2011 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.